to keep from high, and I'm bound to keep on flying. I got one more silver dollar, but I'm not gonna let them catch me, no, not gonna let them catch the midnight rider.
Chris,
yeah! McMonagle here with you for our 5-hour midnight ride on this, well, we'll call it a summer Friday. I know it's not yet, but it was hot out there today watching the Eagle Mighty Mites take on the Jacksonville Jaguars earlier today. Oh, dad life. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. We got a whole bunch of people, an intern. They let an intern in the building, and he's still in the control room. We got Fleegs waiting to take over for Connor on the other side. And I got you for 5 hours, taking your phone calls at 888-808-1019. And, wow, walk-offs all over the place, as the baseball day was rather interesting, I suppose. And let's get to it, and let's start with the Mets. That's right. I said let's start with the Mets, who had a huge win. You cannot lose to the Miami Marlins. You can't do it. You can't lose 2 out of 3 to the Miami Marlins. You can't come off that trip. You can't come off sweeping Washington. You can't come off getting that great win in Philadelphia. And then you can't come back to the mainland and lose to the lousy, terrible, disgusting, not trying to win Miami Marlins. And a lot of it was hard to watch as the offense continues to be wildly inconsistent. You're watching Nimmo have terrible at-bats. Alonso, the same ugly offense you've seen over and over and over again. But ultimately, I thought this was a terrific win in a myriad of ways for the New York Mets. One, you avoid this series loss to Miami, which would have been devastating. It just can't happen. But then there are certain things in this game that no matter how you want to look at the team, and as we do, right, when we look at the Mets right now, there's the two corresponding ways to feel about this Mets team. If you are but Tommy Lugauer has been very positive. If you are, let's call them Tommy Lugauer Met fans, who still believe this season is worthwhile, who still will tell you how many games out of the wild card they are. They'll still tell you this season's long from over and anything can happen. We saw the Arizona Diamondbacks in the World Series last year, and it's hard to argue with that. Despite how many teams are between the Mets and that wild card, yeah, it's a handful of games that could be made up. Lickety-split, we're not even halfway through the season. And then there's this team is rotten to the core. I don't trust anyone. I wouldn't be surprised if they sell Alonso. We're stuck with Lindor's contract. If only there was a way to ship out McNeil. Nimmo's been terrible, you know, and ultimately Stearns is going to do what Stearns wants to do, which I do believe he wants to do, and trade everyone, acquire assets, and go about building this team in his image. No matter which kind of Met fan you are, no matter how you look at the Mets, last night was as good as it can be. Because if you are the positive Met fan, hey, you won a big game to avoid this disaster against Miami. Luis Severino continues his good starting pitching. He's really been great for the team. Another nice six-inning performance. You get Diaz back from the injury, pitched a nice clean inning, and hopefully maybe just a break and just to get away from it with the injury kind of cleansed him of whatever he was dealing with mentally and whatever lack of confidence he had. And that's a good to come back right away, although, you know, not being in a closing situation still, but to come back, be given the closer job by the manager, and have your first outing back be a nice clean one, hopefully that can build him some confidence. And then you saw the big home run from what I will probably tell you right now, the best hitter on this Met team. The Met hitter I have the most confidence in. The player I believe in the big spot, besides maybe Bader, who isn't nearly the same player as JD Martinez, but is clearly, you know, has been clutch for this Mets team. But JD Martinez is someone who was brought over here last minute, who was sort of the only really addition to the offense, like legit addition to the offense, middle of the order type bat addition to the offense. And he's been excellent for the Mets. And he's the guy I think you would want up there in that spot. And he comes through with the big walk-off home run to give you a much-needed victory. And you've won 8 out of the last 12. You're feeling better. You haven't lost a series now in a while. You swept Washington. You split with the Philadelphia Phillies. And now you've taken a series coming back. You're starting to build momentum here, which, you know, if you've heard this show, I'm a big proponent of. So you're starting to build momentum. You haven't lost the series. You're playing okay. You're pitching fine. You got your closer back to at least do something to help this bullpen that's been a disaster over the last month. And you came through in the clutch. Lindor with a good at-bat to get on. And ultimately, that's a nice walk-off win to give you good vibes heading into the rest of the season. Bravo. You feel good about it if you're that kind of positive Met fan. And then if you are the negative Met fan who wants to trade everybody, yet another game where you could look at two of arguably your best trade pieces heading down into the trade deadline in JD Martinez on a one-year deal and Luis Severino. They continue to add up. I mean, who wouldn't? Luis Severino has a track record of being an ace. You put aside last year, when Severino pitches, Severino is excellent. Severino is the ace of the Yankee staff for years. Severino gets people out. Severino in this game, he still has the stuff. His strikeouts are down this year. Only had 2 strikeouts in this game. But to go 6 innings, 1 run, get out of jams, get the double plays, make the big pitch when he makes it, to stack up what he's been doing this entire year, Severino can get you a nice return on a team that's going to be chasing the pennant, needing some starting pitching. And JD Martinez, you want another guy with track record 30-100 last year, a middle of the order impact type bat who can show you, I know it's his first walk-off home run ever, but it's showing you the ability to be clutch, the ability to be the guy, and without question, is part of the many myriad of assets they have that could get them a decent return. And those two guys right now, for me, are the top of the trade wish list of the New York Mets, if that's what they eventually will end up doing, which I believe they will. Those two guys are, without question, two of the better pieces they have to get a return to start to continue to shape this new era of Mets baseball that will start probably next year with Stearns and maybe spending some money in free agency. We all know the money's coming off the books for Scherzer and Verlander. And, you know, we don't have to talk about Soto every 10 seconds, excuse me, but we all know the money that could be spent in free agency, plus the addition of a lot of young talent. You have Manaea, you have Quintana, you have Severino, you have JD Martinez. You have all these pieces that you could trade away. Plus, you got Lindor getting better, who's a key piece. You got Diaz, hopefully back, who's a key piece to your bullpen and throwing. Last night went about as well as it could have for the New York Mets. That's a solid win, no matter how you look at this franchise. And then you get to the Yankees. And here's what I'll say about the Yankees. As a Yankee fan, you know things are going well. You know things are going well. When your team has what otherwise would be a heartbreaking loss, battling back after doing nothing offensively, being no hit for 6-7 innings, battling back in the late innings to take the lead, and then blowing the game in the 9th, and my reaction is, okay. We got Boston and Baltimore coming up. It didn't impact me at all. And I am shocked driving in listening to you, the Met fan, you, the Yankee fan, calling Keith. And I knew, I just can't believe how any other reaction than just, listen, we'll get into Rizzo and we'll get into Clay Holmes. But ultimately, this team absolutely dominated this Royals team to the point where they're an out away from sweeping all 4 games. The one day the offense does absolutely nothing, they still rally back to get 3 runs in the 8th. And then Clay Holmes gets beat. And a couple of things that bother me more than Clay Holmes in that inning, if you want to be fair. And there was a couple of things in this game that just felt like it was going to turn in this direction. One, it ended up not being the biggest of deals, but the non-balk call pissed me off. It's clearly a balk. That's one aspect of it. Judge having arguably his worst game of the year and certainly the worst game of this stretch since he's turned it on with four strikeouts. And then, of course, you get the... and I'm forgetting the Juan Soto getting thrown out at second base. I understand he's trying to get the second base. The throw came all the way home. I don't love that base running. Not with Judge coming up behind you. You can't get thrown out in second base to ruin that rally with a pitcher on the ropes. So that bothered me, getting thrown out in second base. I don't think that was great base running. He was clearly going to be safe. It's not like you needed to draw the throw or get a cutoff. And then, of course, Anthony Rizzo. And Anthony Rizzo, I understand he hits a home run in this game. And I understand I gave him a benefit of the doubt a couple days ago when he had an inning where he saved probably three hits. And ultimately, I probably think maybe his defense isn't quite as bad as we get on him for, because one cost the game and then this one cost the game. Attack the baseball, please. I don't know why he is so laissez-faire playing the first base position over the last... I mean, I told you before, I hope my wife loves me as much as he loves throwing it to the first baseman, to the pitcher covering first. The guy never just tries to make the play himself. He is always looking to make the toss to first base, and he waits back on a slow grounder on this. Instead of attacking it and trying to get it to Clay Holmes earlier, he waits and he waits and he waits. I have no idea what he's waiting for. And we've seen Clay Holmes give up hits like this. This is part and parcel of when Clay Holmes gets beat. But Rizzo, that defensive play pisses me off. And then I'll tell you something else that pisses me off. On the game-winning hit, I know it's hit like a bullet. But why is LeMahieu not playing the line and playing no doubles defense with a runner on first? With the winning run on first, the one thing you can't give up is a base hit down the line. Reminiscent of 95 and watching Junior, Ken Griffey Jr. run around the bases. You cannot, that's the only play you can't have. You know Clay Holmes gives up ground balls. Can you be a little bit closer to the line? Just a little bit? But ultimately, Clay Holmes blows, what, his second game of the year? Clay Holmes still has, what, an ERA under one? Under two, excuse me. And I understand he's going to be a talking point. And so many Yankee fans are so hung up on Clay Holmes. And we've talked about it. They need more strikeouts in the back end of the bullpen. I don't think anybody would disagree with that on some level. But the idea that Clay Holmes isn't a good enough closer for this team is just unbelievably dumb. I don't know how else to put it. Because if you look around the rest of Major League Baseball, show me a closer. Show me a reliever that the Yankees can bring here that will do better than what Clay Holmes has done. Show me the reliever who they can go get who hasn't blown a save, who doesn't give up a run. The guy didn't give up a run for the first month and a half of the season. And yet they blow one game. They have 49 wins. They have the best record in the American League. They just took out Kansas City out back behind the woodshed for the first three games of this series. They had a lead in the ninth, and still, this is what we're focused on instead of the idea they dominated the series in every which way. And I get it. And we'll talk about Clay Holmes. But again, call me up. 888-808-1019. Call me up and tell me how the Yankees get a better reliever than Clay Holmes. First go find one, which you might find a more difficult task than you think. Then let me know how they get him. Because if you're going to find a better closer than him, good luck getting him. And if you want to bring up Miller in Oakland, he just blew a save the other day, gave up a home run, which Clay Holmes does not give up. But tell me how you're going to get a young kid like that under control. Who do you want to trade? I just broached the idea of Vladimir Guerrero yesterday. Didn't even say the Yankees should do it. This should be on the Yankee radar. I just proposed it after they traded away Biggio and thought maybe the core would be breaking up. It doesn't sound as crazy as I thought it did a week ago. That's all I said. And I got bombarded on social media. You know who that would be? You'd have to give up Spencer Jones for that. Well, who do you think you are giving up for a young reliever under control for the next however many years, throwing 100 miles an hour? Where do you think you are getting this closer that is better than Clay Holmes? This team is flawed, as all teams are. They are not perfect, despite their record. And as much as I'll tell you they are the best team in the American League, there's always room for Jello and there's always room for improvement. But Clay Holmes in particular, as the closer, is so far down the list that it makes me laugh how much time I'm going to spend on it this morning. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. So we'll get into the Clay Holmes discussion. We'll get into the Mets, whether you viewed this game as a game to get you back into contention, continue on your winning ways, avoid us losing a series to the most, you know, terrible team in baseball, or if you viewed it as, you know, maybe I kind of viewed it as, hey, my two best trade chips continue to help me out and make me feel like I'm going to get a good return for J.D. Martinez and Severino. And then, of course, Clay Holmes and his strikeout rate. And I listen, they don't have enough strikeouts in the back end of the bullpen. It doesn't mean Clay Holmes has to go or Clay Holmes has to be moved. And since we all like to talk about strikeouts and since we all want our closers to have more swing and miss stuff, and since so many of you like to call up and harken back to the good old days of the dynasty of the 90s and Mariano Rivera, which we've all been spoiled for years as we watched the greatest closer ever go about his business on a daily basis, I went back and did some fact-checking. And I'm curious how many strikeouts Mariano Rivera had. And I'm curious how his numbers and his strikeout numbers look against Clay Holmes' strikeout numbers. Maybe we'll take a look at that a little bit later.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
All right, 1224. McMonagle here with you for another 4.5 hours or so as our midnight ride will continue all the way into 5 a.m. and the weekend. At least for me. Yes. I need the weekend. I'll tell you that right now. And the Yankees' first look at Fenway Park this year. That should be fun. And we know the talk is going to be Clay Holmes and this bullpen. When I honestly, I'm more inclined to blame Rizzo. I mean, I just am. I couldn't stand watching that play. It took forever. Don't you realize you have to charge the ball? And then LeMahieu, guard the line, will you? And then for the Mets, J.D. Martinez with the walk-off two-run bomb to avoid disaster against the Marlins. And for me, no matter how you look at the Mets, and I tend to look at them as they are going to be sellers at the deadline, that was a great game. That was a great game for the Mets. Everything came up Metsy in that game. You got Diaz back. If you believe that this team can make a run, J.D. Martinez is showing you that he's that guy in the middle of the lineup who can help and be a force along with, hopefully, you know, Lindor, who's coming around, still not much from Alonso. Nimmo stinks. And the offense still stinks, but at least you got the victory, avoided disaster. Severino continues to pitch great. So if you want to thrust the Mets back into the playoff spot, you got a big win you couldn't afford to lose. It's one of those wins where it's a nice win. It would have been a devastating loss. You can't lose 2 out of 3 of the Marlins. You just can't. And then if you're a trade everybody Met fan, or that's what you think the Mets are going to do, two of their biggest pieces, Severino and J.D. Martinez, had a big night to further their value, which I think is significant. I mean, if you look around Major League Baseball, find me another starting pitcher with the track record throwing 98 miles an hour in the sixth inning. Show me another pitcher. Like, there's not many that are going to be available for trade with the track record and the stuff of Severino. Plus, he's having a very good year. He's got a 3.12 ERA. And then show me another slugger with as much of a resume as J.D. Martinez. These are two big pieces for the Mets to trade, and they are hitting their stride just as the real trade deadline starts to ramp up and just as the scouts start to show up at every game. And as these teams decide whether they're becoming sellers or acquirers. I could have said buyers, but I said acquirers. I'm not sure why. Whether they become sellers or buyers, this is when they're looking at the Mets and their two big star trading pieces showed up. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Dash in Rockland County. What's up, Dash?
Hey, so I was just thinking about Clay Holmes, and I was looking at his stats after the loss, and I was trying to compare him to, like, similarly elite closers.
Yeah.
And I was looking at, like, specifically whip, so, like, walks and hits per innings pitch, and I was seeing, like, most of the elite ones in the MLB right now have a sub-1. They do not give up that many base runners, and Clay Holmes, I think, was at, like, 1.3. And so I was thinking that feeling that you get when he pitches, which is like, oh, you're still on your toes a bit. It is real, because he is giving up more base runners than most of the relievers. So I don't know. I think you're right. Like, there's not really a great option. I was going to say the closer from Miami, Tanner Scott, who I watched today, and he gave up a home run, ironically.
Correct.
But he could be a good, like, late inning,
no doubt,
lefty, because I feel like our lefties are kind of weak.
No doubt.
I don't know what you think.
No doubt. I'm totally with you, Dash. Completely with you. They needed. They're going to add relieving. They're going to add a reliever or two, and they need more strikeouts overall. They haven't had a pen, an entire pen, that doesn't strike out a lot of guys. But when I watch Clay Holmes, he doesn't typically get hit that hard. So I I've talked about this, that the problem is when even Clay Holmes is on, he gives up, you know, contact and can have runners on. But I mean, I understand the whip is a little high, but if you watch him overall, I mean, his numbers are as good as any reliever in baseball. Like, look around baseball. Is he the best? No. I'm not saying he's definitely the best, but he's an all-star. He's one of, if not, he's one of the best relievers, if not the best. And to go, it's hard to get anybody better. Like, if they could go get better, fine. Everyone wanted to sign Bader. Hater, right? Everyone want to go sign Hater, have to get Hater. How's he? Is his season going as well? For $100 million? Like, I have no issue. Does he make you nervous? Of course. You know, again, we don't focus on anybody else. And I'm not saying you should. But if you watch a lot of baseball, every closer makes you nervous. Closers, by definition, make you nervous. We've been spoiled because we had the greatest of all time. But, I mean, Clay Holmes has been good. Clay Holmes has been very good. He is not the problem. They need to add relievers. There's no doubt because, like I said, the entire bullpen kind of, there's names I don't trust. There's guys back there that, although have done okay here, I don't know how much confidence I have in. I would like to have better guys, especially lefties, the caller just mentioned. And overall, they don't strike enough people out. But I will push back on the idea that a closer needs to strike people out, because that's what I'm seeing. It's what I'm seeing. It's what I'm hearing. That, oh, he might be a good seventh, eighth inning guy, but he can't be the closer because you need a closer who strikes people out. You need a closer who strikes people out, who gets swings and misses. Well, maybe a little bit later in the show, we'll go over strikeout numbers between him and the greatest closer who ever lived. Jarvis in Harlem. What's up, Jarvis?
What's up, Chris? How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good, good, good. I want to talk about the Mets and, you know, that tonight's game, because I saw that J.D. Martin hit a walk-off home run.
He certainly did.
I thought they were going to lose 2 out of 3 to the Marlins, just like it happened last month, and lost 2 out of 3 in Miami. But like you were saying at the beginning, like, Tommy Lugar is a fan, the Mets fan, is optimistic, think that they have, like, three games behind the wild card. But he's still optimistic. But Sal Acala, not so much, because
but that's fine. But Jarvis, what are you? We don't have to talk about what Tommy Lugar thinks, what Sal thinks. We don't have to go over the different. We understand there's polarizing thoughts on the Mets, whether it's Sal and Tommy or, you know, Fred down the street and Ted in accounting. I get it. What do you think, Jarvis?
I think they probably have the easiest schedule. They got the Padres, the last time they what happened in 2022, that wild card was, I lost 2 out of 3, but, you know, to Padres in City Field. So,
right.
So that they probably had the easiest schedule. So they do what they had to do, keep winning, you know, beat up the team that you're supposed to beat up, maybe they have a shot. So,
well, I mean, that's it. Right now, it's still too early. As much as I don't believe in them, and I've already been on record saying that I think they're going to sell at the deadline and not be a playoff team this year. It's too early for anyone to really give up on them. It's too early for themselves to give up. I don't think Stearns is at the point yet. I think he's open-minded. As much as I think Stearns is ready to trade, and I think that's what he wants to do, much like any GM, he can't. If they are in the wild card, if they are a game out of the wild card, if they are right behind one or two teams and they are a game, a half a game, two games out of the wild card, you kind of have to chase it. You have to chase it. So the Mets could take the decision-making out of his hands. Like, there is a level. If they are four games out with four teams in between them and the wild card, he can sell. There is a line of there is a line where he can still justify trading, and then there's a line that you can't. And as much as the owner came out and kind of poo-pooed the idea of, you know, finishing three games under 500 but being a wild card team, you can win a World Series three games under 500 in this day and age. It's crazy. It might be bad for baseball, but it's possible. There will be a point come the trade deadline where they will either be close enough where you can't trade away pieces and you look to add on some level. I don't think they'll add big no matter what, but they could look to add minor things for minor improvements. Or there's a line where it's, okay, even though if we're close, there's still enough teams in front of us, we're still far enough away back, and ultimately I'll do what I want to do. Like, that's the Mets are going to have to outplay, in my opinion, Stearns' desire to sell. And even I would have to admit, it's way too early to decide which way that's going to go. Now, to your point about the schedule, you know, they're facing some good pitching against San Diego over the next couple days, but they got San Diego at home. They go on the road to face the defending world champs, who are struggling a bit. Then they take on the Cubs. Then they come home for the Yankees and the really struggling and injured Astros before going to Washington, Pittsburgh, Washington, Colorado before the All-Star break. So, yeah, if the time to make hay, besides the Yankees, the two games set against the Yankees, you are not really you are not facing a team significantly above 500, if at all. Like, let me just double check the standings, because I'm not sure exactly where the Cubs are. I don't think they are 500. I think they're right there. The Cubs are three games under 500, and I'm still pretty sure Texas Rangers are three games under 500. So you're facing the San Diego Padres for three, and San Diego is two games over 500. Then you're facing the under 500 Texas Rangers, the under 500 Chicago Cubs. You got the Yankees for two, the under 500 Houston Astros, the under 500, and you just swept Washington Nationals, although they've won some games here. And then you take on Pittsburgh, who's four games under 500, before playing Washington and Colorado again. So you don't face, besides the Yankees, you don't play a single team over 500 between now and the All-Star break. Not a single team. So, yes, this is time to make hay. If you want to tell you want to tell ownership, you want to tell Stearns that you should believe in this team, now is the time. Because this is a month between now, almost exactly a month. The last game before the All-Star break is July 14th. Today is now June 14th. You have a month of playing every game against the team under 500 besides two with the Yankees. Find a way to be better. And maybe you will be in a position where the general manager can't trade. Javier in Asbury Park. What's up, Javier?
Hey, how are you, Chris?
Good, how are you?
Great show, as always. An idea here. I'm going to be probably the crazy one on this, but Clark Schmidt's coming back. Obviously, yeah. We all know that the Yankees are not going to go to a six-man rotation. I believe Mr. Heel is on an innings count. And yes. Boone has talked about putting him in the bullpen. All right, so... I think
Matt Blake has talked about it more than Boone in one interview. I haven't heard Boone say it too much, but yes, it's something that with the inning limits, there's no way it's not even at least it's being discussed inside the organization.
Correct. So my my outlandish idea is that he could be the closer, barring a trade this year. He can, for the remainder of the year, if they're going to watch how many innings he's pitched. Obviously, he's not going to be a long relief man in the bullpen. So, I mean, if Holmes, obviously, Holmes is our closer. And yes, is he going to have his ups and downs? Absolutely. What closer doesn't? But he'll have some great stuff. And if you're going to have him on an innings count, then why not let him pitch the ninth or eighth inning? I mean, that's something to think about. It's obviously, he's going to shore up the bullpen regardless whether he stays in the rotation or not. That's my thing.
Listen, I hear you, Javier, and I appreciate the phone call. I hate it. As you're saying it, it makes me sick. I understand what you're saying. And the closer role is the one role where, I mean, I suppose there's some validity to it, or at least value to it, should I say. I need to see Luis Gil making starts in the postseason. He's too damn good. They did it, if you remember in 09, they did it with Phil Hughes. They took Phil Hughes out of the rotation, they put him in the bullpen, and he became an extremely important piece in the back end of the bullpen and helped them win a championship. He never looked like this. This is the best pitcher in baseball, arguably. He's right there. I mean, you are talking about, he is on a stretch better than almost any stretch that Gerrit Cole has had in a Yankee uniform, including last year's Cy Young Award season. Like, he is unhittable right now. Now, if that changes, then maybe I'll change my mind. If he goes through a real tough stretch here and it's clearly because he's fatigued or whatever the case may be, and maybe the bullpen will make more sense to me. But right now, he's dominant. His fastball changeup is excellent. And while I think he would be a damn good closer or a damn good reliever and really help them in the bullpen. And if they can't get the bullpen pieces, is Clark Schmidt a more of an upgrade to the rotation than, say, some no-name nobody that would be to the back end of the bullpen? Yeah, I guess. But I want Cole and Luis Gil in the starting rotation come playoff series. How could you not want that? How do you not want to see that? I have to figure, as long as he's pitching the way he's pitching, I have to figure out a way to get to that. I want game one, Cole. I want game two, Luis Gil. I don't know. I'm sorry. I can't think of anything else right now. And while your idea is certainly not foolish, and while it makes plenty of sense considering there's no doubt it's being discussed inside the organization. There's no doubt. Matt Blake told you as much. And while they tell you up and down there's no inning limit, and we're going to monitor him, I think they all expect for him to go through some level of fatigue here because he hasn't pitched the innings. He's coming off Tommy John surgery. But I can't just say, hey, look, we've pitched him as long as we can pitch him. Now it's time to put him in the bullpen. Like, I hate that idea. I hate it. I hate it. And I hate even more putting him in the bullpen and then ramping him back up towards the end of the season to get. So I don't know. They're just going to have to skip starts. They're going to have to maneuver a bunch of different things. But how do you not want him throwing 6-7 innings in a playoff game? Daniel in Brooklyn. What's up, Daniel? Danny, what's up?
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I was just calling to talk about the Yankee bullpen. So
yeah.
I know, you're a big fan of Clay Holmes. Obviously, his numbers are looking pretty good. ERA is low. Obviously, he has one of the higher amounts of saves in pretty much all the league. But as Dash said a little while ago, he definitely makes you nervous when you come in. But I think it's because if he's not starting an inning fresh and he's grabbing, Hamilton's base runners, anybody else's base runners, he's letting up those hits in those key moments. And so he's not even getting the, the runs pushed on him. They're getting pushed on everybody else. So that's why his ERA kept low.
I'll go check his... I'll see if I can find his inherited runners number. How many situations do you remember Clay Holmes coming in and giving up runs this year? Anybody else's runs or anything? You remember
a couple last week?
Came in and gave up Hamilton. Yeah, I mean maybe one, but I don't think it's been an issue. I don't think it's been. And when he comes in giving up hits left and right, when he comes into a clean inning, a not clean inning, I think he's been good. I think he's been good at almost every turn. You don't think so?
Yeah, not saying he's not solid. I mean, let's be real. We're all spoiled with Rivera, but right. I mean, just I've been watching a couple more games here and there the last 2-3 weeks, and just last week Hamilton got the loss. Clay came in, inherited a couple base runners, let up 2 runs, and then once he let up 2 runs, he shut him down after that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that might be the only major time I even remember that happening. I mean, inherited runs are an important part of being a reliever, no doubt. It's an important stat for a closer, less so, because it typically won't happen as much. But, and the other thing with Clay, too, is he's the sinker ball pitcher who, when you don't pitch him for 3 or 4 days, it's typically when he comes in after 3 or 4 days off, struggles and is too strong. And doesn't get the sink and throws harder and doesn't get the sink and movement on his pitches. But, I mean, I watch Clay Holmes and I see a reliever who's been relatively pretty damn good. Early on in the year, he got saved by some good defense and a couple of wacky situations early on. But for the most part, I mean, the guy didn't let up a run for a month and a half. Like, this is every closer blows games, every single one. And he gets, he's out of the inning in this game if Rizzo charges the baseball correctly. He's out of the inning. They need better infield defense. The things that can't happen with Clay Holmes is misplays defensively. Because if you watch all these games, and so you want to be fair too, like people mentioned WHIP, in today's day and age, everything's a single. Gleyber Torres throws one away. Oh, he had to charge the ball. It's a single. Instead of an error. Like, watching that game yesterday, he needs to make that play. You need better infield positioning. You can't be in a position with the runner on first base being the winning run, and you're not playing no doubles defense. LeMahieu has to be a hell of a lot closer to the line. Now, it's hit like a bullet. I'm not saying he would have made the play even, but you have to be closer to the line than he was. Like, you have, that's the only, as a third baseman, it can't get down the line. You have to protect the line. So when Clay Holmes is on the mound, you have to play good defense. That's fair. He's not going to come in and blow guys away. But, I mean, again, find me a reliever who's better. You're bringing up one instance where he gave up a couple of runs of inherited runs. Like, he's been great. Steve in Manhattan. What's up, Steve?
I was just going to say your comment about Mariano Rivera versus Clay Holmes.
Yes.
Rivera's record in postseason wins was 8-1 loss. His ERA was 0.70.
Yes.
So Clay Holmes hasn't really...
you're misunderstanding what I'm saying, okay? I never compared him to the great Mariano Rivera as a straight-up closer. I'd be a fool to do that. What I'm saying is the narrative is out there, and I'm going to do it in a bit, the narrative is out there that you can't be a closer having the strikeout numbers or the swing and miss numbers Clay Holmes has, that you can't put that many balls in play, that you need to strike out everyone. And if you look at Mariano Rivera's strikeout numbers, you'd be surprised.
But you look at it, what he was great at was his postseason performances.
That's not entirely true. Yes, that's what made him special, but he was great every single time he hit the mound. Regular season, postseason,
though, makes the difference between a good closer and a great closer.
Yeah, I understand that. He also, if you want to be fair about it, nobody likes to talk about it. He blew the 97 series against Cleveland. He blew the 2001 series against the Diamondbacks. He blew 0-4 against the Red Sox. I mean, it's not like he's impervious to blown saves, even in the postseason.
Well, Clay Holmes has yet to prove himself.
Clay Holmes, Steve, I'm sorry. I normally I would, like, in no way, shape, and form, Like, this is what bothers me sometimes about the callers, and it's our own fault. It's our own fault, too. WFN, it's our own fault. We put out stories and the headline, and nobody reads the story or goes back and listens to what I say. But when I'm doing the show, I expect you to listen, Steve, on some level, and comprehend what I'm saying. In no way am I saying Clay Holmes is as good a closer as Mariano Rivera. In no way. Let me make that clear. Mariano Rivera is the greatest closer to ever live. Clay Holmes isn't even the best closer in the league, or necessarily. Like, I'm not even putting them in the same category of success or anything other than the specific thought and narrative that is out there right now about Clay Holmes is that he doesn't miss enough bats to be the closer. That's the reason why he can't be the New York Yankees closer come postseason time. And by the way, if you want to look at Clay Holmes' postseason numbers, they're actually excellent. He has yet to give up a run in the postseason. He has pitched 8 innings in the postseason. He has a 0 ERA and a 0.6 whip. So he's been better in the postseason than he's even been in the regular season. Now, it's a very short sample size. It's the wild card game in 2021, and then it's the ALDS and ALCS 2 years ago. But he's pitched 8 innings, and he's given up 3 hits in 8 innings. He's allowed 5 base runners in 3 innings. In 8 innings, excuse me. 5 base runners in 8 innings, and he struck out 8 batters in 8 innings. I'm not comparing Mariano Rivera and Clay Holmes other than, and I guess I'll just do it now, other than the strikeouts. Because the narrative is Clay Holmes doesn't miss enough bats. Clay Holmes plays to contact, and therefore he cannot be the closer. The closer has to come in and blow people away. The closer has to come in and get strikeouts. The closer has to come in and miss bats. Anything other than that isn't a closer. That's the narrative. And I will push back at that with Mariano Rivera and his strikeout numbers. Mariano Rivera had a career strikeout per nine of 8.2. Mariano Rivera only had had a 10 strikeout per nine season in 96 of his entire career. He had a career of 8.2 strikeouts per nine. Clay Holmes as a Yankee is a full strikeout and a half better than that. Clay Holmes strikes out 9.7, has 9.7 strikeouts per nine. Clay Holmes, even this year, where he's having the worst strikeout numbers of his Yankee career, is still 8.9, better than Mariano Rivera's career. And that's not just the last few years. That's, look back at Mariano Rivera's numbers. He doesn't have big-time strikeout numbers. Mariano Rivera didn't always come in and blow people away. Mariano Rivera pitched to contact. Mariano Rivera got ground balls. Mariano Rivera got beat by little bloops like 2001. Mariano Rivera got beat because he threw a ball away like in 2001. Mariano Rivera got beat by a stolen base and a little ground ball up the middle. Yes, he got beat by the Alomar home run in 97. But he didn't always come in and have nothing but strikeouts. And that's not to compare them as pitchers, but just to say, you can't tell me that a reliever has to come in or a closer has to come in and strike everybody out, otherwise he can't be the closer, when the greatest closer of all time did it less than Clay Holmes does. That's all I'm saying. If you want to look at it, Mariano Rivera, over the course of his career, struck out less people than Clay Holmes is striking out now. You can pitch the way Clay Holmes pitches and still be the closer. You've got to be sound defensively. He had Tino Martinez and Mark Teixeira. He had Derek Jeter at shortstop. He had a very slick fielding Robinson Cano and Chuck Knobloch. Although he ran into the yips later in his Yankee tenure. He had Scott Brosius at third base. Mariano Rivera broke bats. He didn't always miss them. So before you tell me that Clay Holmes can't be the closer, I will tell you he strikes out more people than Mariano Rivera. So if it's going to be he can't be the closer, it's going to be straight on ability. It's going to be straight on blown saves. It's going to be straight on his effectiveness. It's not going to be his style of pitching. It's not going to be his strikeout rate because he strikes out enough. Now, the Yankee bullpen overall has too many of the same type that don't get swings and misses. You'd like some more in the bullpen, and the Yankees will go get some. But the idea that Clay Holmes cannot be be the Yankee closer heading into the postseason because he doesn't strike out enough people is ridiculous. It's not true. He's got to be effective. He's got to make his pitches. And the defense has to help him when there's soft contact. And right now, Rizzo doesn't help him. And Rizzo's hurt him a bunch of times. And Clay Holmes has hurt, and Gleyber Torres has hurt him. Now, again, not comparing them. I'm just saying the style of pitching to contact, doesn't mean you can't be the closer.